Beginning now in chapter 21. If one be found slain in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee to possess it, lying in the field, and it be not known who has slain him. Now we have an interesting situation. Here's someone who's been killed, been slain. He's found lying in the field, and it is not known who is responsible for the murder. Now we've had the case of somebody who would kill somebody else accidentally, how he should flee to the city of refuge. And if he killed him on purpose and had hate in his heart, then even though he were to flee the city of refuge, he'd be tried and put to death for it. But here we have a dead person is found. He's been slain by someone, and it is not known who did the killing. Then thy elders and thy judges shall come forth, and they shall measure unto the cities which are round about him that is slain. And it shall be that the city which is next unto the slain man, even the elders of that city, shall take an heifer, which hath not been wrought with, and which hath not drawn in the yoke. So first the thing they have to do is to find which city has the jurisdiction over this dead person and over this act of murder. So what they do then is they measure from the dead person. They measure and see which city is the closest city. And this would probably be a city that was of a suitable size to be able to adequately carry out this procedure. It'd find the city that was closest, then that city had the jurisdiction. And then the elders of that city were to bring down, they were to take an heifer which had not been wrought with and which had not drawn in the yoke. Now this would be a heifer that had not had any abuse, had not been put to work, and had not been drawn in the yoke. And the ancient Jews say that the reason this heifer was not to have been drawn in the yoke is that the heifer was symbolic of the person who had committed the murder, and the person who committed the murder then was considered to be following after Belial, who would not follow God's rules, who would not yield to the rules of God, who would not have the yoke of God put on him. And so this heifer was one who had not been put to the yoke yet. Now, whether that's really the reason for it or not, I cannot say, but I just give you the benefit of what some of the ancient Jews believed about it. And the elders of that city shall bring down the heifer unto a rough valley. Now, this was to be a valley that was not used for productive purposes. A rough valley, which is neither eared nor sown. Eared would mean it didn't have any corn growing there, or maize, or whatever the ear might be. And it had not been sown. It was not in the process of germinating any plants for production. And shall strike off the heifer's neck there in the valley. And here again, the Jewish tradition says that this valley, once this had happened, and it could not be used anymore for productive purposes. It was kind of a no man's land. So the heifer had the neck struck off, and it was symbolic then of punishing the person who had committed the act of murder. This was the way that the elders of the city had of exonerating themselves and of exonerating society for this act of killing somebody. And the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come near. For them the Lord thy God hath chosen to minister unto him and to bless in the name of the Lord. And by their word shall every controversy and every stroke be tried. So this was a matter that had the priest involved. They no doubt made some kind of inquiry. They made some kind of investigation. They tried to see if there was some way to find out who had committed this act. And of course the procedure here is for a situation in which they could not find the murderer. And all the elders of that city that are next unto the slain man, shall wash their hands over the heifer that is beheaded in the valley. So here we have now the symbolic act of washing your hands of a matter so as to proclaim your innocence. They washed their hands over the heifer. David spoke in Psalms 26:6 of washing his hands and not being guilty. We have another act that we're all familiar with, that of Pilate, who washed his hands, trying to proclaim that he was innocent of any of the guilt that would be attached with the death of Christ. And of course, this was a misapplication of this because Pilate was not truly innocent. He could have prevented the crucifixion of Christ. It was at his direction that it was carried out, and so he made a farce of this. But this is the institution, as far as I know, of the act of washing your hands of a matter so that you proclaim that you are not guilty and you're not responsible for the deeds done here. And they shall answer and say, our hands have not shed this blood, neither have our eyes seen it. In other words, they're completely proclaiming that they are innocent. They haven't done it, nor have they seen who did do it. They do not know how to further carry out the punishment that should rightfully be meted out to the person guilty of the murder. Now we see here how God had such a strong feeling about somebody being killed by another person wrongfully. He did not intend for this to be done. The land was defiled because of it, and the nearest city to where the deed happened had to go through this procedure. And furthermore, they said, in verse 8, be merciful, O Lord, unto thy people Israel, whom thou hast redeemed, and lay not innocent blood unto thy people of Israel's charge, and the blood shall be forgiven them. Now, they were so in danger of being charged with this man's blood who had been killed, even though they had nothing to do with it, so they had to go through all this and beseech God not to lay this blood to their charge, not to lay this blood to the rest of Israel's charge, to society in general. So shalt thou put away the guilt of innocent blood from among you when thou shalt do that which is right in the sight of the Lord. Now this is the way they got relief from being guilty. So it's not just a matter of saying, well, here's somebody who's killed. We don't know who did it. Too bad. They had to go through all this elaborate procedure so that they would not be held guilty by God for having taken this man's blood. Now we have a similar instance in the New Testament that I'd like to refer to give us some idea of how bad it is to have sin in your midst. These people in Israel had sin in their midst. Somebody either living in that city or living in the vicinity had no doubt committed this act. They didn't know who it was, but the sinner was free and loose. And so the people had to go through this act to show their extreme regret for this person being killed and to proclaim their innocence of it and that they were free of any attachment to it. In the city of Corinth, the church there had a situation arise in which they had a man who was living in a state of adultery. Or he's committing fornication, rather. And in the 5th chapter of 1 Corinthians, Paul talks to them about this, about how they had a man that should have his father's wife. And he says, and you are puffed up, and have not rather mourned, that he that hath done this deed might be taken away from you. This person is so bad that he should not be allowed to remain among you. You should take him away from you. And so after Paul instructed them that they should definitely make some kind of a disposition with this sinner until the man had changed, then we read over in 2 Corinthians 7:11 where Paul is talking about it. He says, now I rejoice, not that you were made sorry, but that you sorrowed to repentance. For you were made sorry after a godly manner, that you might receive damage by us and nothing. For godly sorrow worketh repentance to salvation, not to be repented of, but the sorrow of the world worketh death. For behold this selfsame thing, that you sorrowed after a godly sort. What carefulness it wrought in you, Yea, what clearing of yourselves. Yea, what indignation. Yea, what fear. Yea, what vehement desire. Yea, what zeal. Yea, what revenge. In all things, you have approved yourselves to be clear in this matter. So these Corinthians, when they saw what their clear duty was, and they saw how really bad this sin was of fornication, then they had to clear themselves. They had indignation. They had fear. They had a strong desire and a zeal. They wanted justice to be done. And so then they finally did approve themselves in the matter by having withdrawn from this person, as Paul told them to. So today we cannot just let sin go by and blithely say, oh, well, I'm not doing this, I'm doing that. We do have a responsibility. And if we're going to church at a place in which the congregation is standing for and teaching a doctrine that's contrary to what God teaches, we cannot fold our arms and say, oh, well, so what? We have to clear ourselves. We have to have a strong desire. We have to have a fear. We have to have a zeal about the matter. Just as those people had to clear themselves over in the book of Deuteronomy for this murder that they didn't know who committed, even so we today have to have the same intent, desire to not want to be guilty. We want to be free of, we want to have our hands washed.